This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Children's Hour. The selections for this hour every week are designed for school-aged listeners. I'm going to read you a book, or at least part of one. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name's Meryl Goldsmith. I'm very excited to be with you today. This book is probably more than an hour long, but it's kind of crazy, and I hope you like it. It's called My Big Fat Zombie Goldfish, written by Mo O'Hara. A frankly shocking tale. Chapter 1, The Evil Scientist. Yesterday, my big brother Mark turned into a real-life evil scientist. I mean, he always was mostly evil anyway. You know, knocking me down things or over things, locking me in things or out of things, squashing me under things or between things. That kind of mostly evil stuff. But lately, he's slid up the evil scale from mostly evil to nearly totally evil. It started with the way he talked. "Hey, Tom," he shouted, "remote, now." Mark spoke in short words, like his brain had shrunk or something. He grabbed the remote and kicked my foot away. "Moron," he mumbled. My best friend Pradeep, who lives next door, says that moron is a big brother word for little brothers. His brother Sanj, who's also mostly evil, calls him that too. Luckily, Sanj is away at boarding school, though, so he can only be mostly evil to Pradeep during school vacations. I told my mom about Mark going more evil, but Mom said it's just that Mark is, quote, home mornal, which I think is why he's moaning at home a lot. She said he can't help acting evil. Well, she didn't say evil exactly, but she should have. She said it's because he has lots of hormones racing through his body. Just when I thought Mark couldn't get worse, Granny and Granddad got him a chemistry set for his birthday. It came in a huge box with big official writing on the front that read, "Warning. Only for use by children over 12 years old, to be used solely under the supervision of adults." While I was reading the box, Mark thwacked my head from behind. "Don't touch this. Got it?" he said. I walked away, rubbing my head, mostly because it hurt, but also to get my head out of the way in case he decided to thwack me again. He took out a white scientist coat and looked at all the stuff inside the box. There were bottles and test tubes and cups and little stirring things, all made of glass, real, breakable glass. Mom looked at the chemistry set and leaned over to me. "Maybe you shouldn't touch that, dear. It looks like an accident waiting to happen," she said. Mark put on the coat and turned around. He folded up the collar, shoved his hands in the pockets, and let a creepy smile spread over his face. And you know that squirmy, prickly feeling you get when you let a millipede crawl on your arm? I had that feeling, but in my stomach. Mark had turned into an evil scientist. But I didn't know how evil he could be until he came home the next day with a goldfish. Chapter 2, A Fish in a Bag. Now, we've had goldfish before. We won the Metachurch Fair by throwing ping pong balls into little bowls they were swimming in. They didn't live very long, though. Mom said it was because the fish all had concussions from being hit on the head with the ping pong balls. I had a concussion once when I was 4, after I accidentally ran into the front door that Mark accidentally slammed shut as he accidentally yelled, "Run, Tom, run!" That was back when he was just mostly evil. I remember the doctor shining a tiny flashlight into my eyes and then asking me if I could name all the Teletubbies. I told her that Teletubbies were lame and then threw up on her shoes. Not to be evil, just because I had to, you know. She said I had a concussion and needed to stay in the hospital overnight so they could keep an eye on me. So the day after Mark got the chemistry set, he came home after school with a goldfish in a little plastic bag and headed straight upstairs. Mom and I followed. "Did you go to a fair?" I asked. "Moron," he shot me a look as he pulled his earphones out of his ears. "It's from the pet shop for school, science week." "Why do you need..." Mom started to ask when Mark shoved a letter from his bag into her hand. She read out loud, "Class 7M will be doing experiments on the effects of pollution on marine populations. Students will show photos of their experiments to the class tomorrow." She looked at Mark. "Okay, if it's homework," she said as she headed down the stairs, "at least you're doing something green." Mark put on his white scientist coat and took out his chemistry set. As he unpacked the box, I got that crawly millipede feeling in my stomach again. Mark should have done one of those mwahahaha evil scientist laughs at that point, but I guess he was still learning the ropes. Mom shouted up from downstairs, "Mark, look after your brother while I run to the store. I'll be back soon." I heard the door close and looked over at Mark. Normally, as soon as Mom left, Mark would start acting mostly evil to me, like when he caught me reading his Mint Condition, Return of the Attack of the Undead Zombie comic. He wrapped me in beach towels and wedged me in the dog flap until the neighbors complained about my shouting and Mom had to come home from work to unwedge me. Oh, the good old mostly evil days. But now that he was an actual evil scientist, he was too busy to think of things to squeeze me into or trap me under. There was definitely less torture, but more shouting. "Touch nothing, moron," Mark growled at me as he went out to the hall closet. He came back with the old goldfish bowl, filled it in the bathroom sink, and dumped the fish inside. I pressed my face against the glass. This goldfish was fatter than the ones from the fair. It had big, bulging eyes and a very long, wavy tail with three fins. It kind of looked like a really ugly, bug-eyed mermaid if you squinted enough. Then, as I squinted at the fish, it squinted back. Mark was too busy reading the back of a jar from his chemistry set to notice. The fish swam up to the side of the bowl and peered at me through the glass, its little mouth opening and closing. I know it sounds crazy, but I swear it looked like the fish was saying, "Help me." Mark unscrewed the lid of the jar. My millipede feeling got worse. He took out some test tubes and mixed up a bottle of truly evil-looking green mixture. "What are you doing?" I asked. "Polluting," he grunted, and tipped some of the green stuff into the water with the fish. "Stop! It could hurt the fish," I shouted, and tried to grab the bottle. Mark shoved me back on the carpet with one hand while he added some brown powder and gray flakes to the fishbowl. I tried to get up, but he held me firm by pushing his size 7 sneakers down on my chest. He grabbed his phone and snapped a picture of the fish swimming around in the gunky water. "What will it do to the fish?" I gasped with the last bit of air left in my lungs. "Dunno," he said. "That's the experiment." He laughed, an absolutely perfect evil scientist laugh. Man, he was a fast learner. Then he put his phone back in his pocket. "I'll come back later to take another picture, and then I can flush it." Mark lifted his foot off my shirt, and I sucked in a lungful of air. "Flush what?" I sputtered. "Duh, the fish." He put his earphones in again and headed back down the stairs, shouting back, "Remember, touch nothing, moron. Got it?" But I totally didn't get it. I stood up and tried to rub off the footprint Mark had left on my T-shirt. Then I glanced over at the fishbowl. It didn't look good. The fish was squirming in the bowl and sucking in gulps of mucky water. Then it swam up to the glass again. I stared through the cloudy green water right into the fish's big, bulging eyes, and I did the most dangerous thing I've done in my short life. I touched it. Chapter 3, Fish 911. I did more than touch it. I reached into the bowl and scooped it up with my fingers and ran to the bathroom. "Come on, fish, hang on. You'll be okay now," I muttered as I ran. The fish was covered in the green gunk, and it was flipping about in my hands. At least it was still moving, but it wouldn't last long, all gunked up like that. I tried to hold it in one hand while I turned on the tap and tried to wash it, but I could feel it wriggling through my fingers. Then, slurp! It flipped out of my hand and landed in the toilet. Splash! I dropped down next to the bowl. The fish kind of bobbed around and swished its tail, but then it went still and leaned over. Our other goldfish all did that leaning thing, too, just before they went belly up and died. I raced to my bedroom and got my walkie-talkie. "Tom to Pradeep! Come in, Pradeep, over!" I said. "Roger," Pradeep answered. "I mean, Roger, Tom, or Tom, Roger. Anyway, I'm here, over. Pradeep, it's a code red," I shouted. "Over, quick." We had this code of important stuff we agreed on when we were back in first grade. Yellow is stuff like, girls are nearby. Blue is stuff like, there's a dog digging up the gross food from our lunch boxes that we buried. Orange is stuff like, there's a teacher-parent coming. Red is the most important stuff you can imagine, like aliens are invading the neighborhood, or escaped elephants are trampling the playground, or somebody is murdering a goldfish. If you're trying to figure out the system, it's not like traffic lights or anything. It's the color of jelly beans from least good to best. "I'll be there on the double," Pradeep said, and hung up. I was still staring at the leaning fish in the toilet when Pradeep ran up the stairs. "I'm here," I called. "What's up?" he asked. I pointed to the fish. Pradeep bent down and looked closely at it. "Did you go to a fair?" he asked. "No, it's Mark's," I said, "part of his evil scientist plan to murder a goldfish with green evil scientist stuff." We leaned over the toilet bowl and stared at the fish again. "Did you learn anything on your Cub Scout first aid day that could help him?" I asked, hopefully. "We didn't do goldfish," he said. The fish tilted to one side, then the other, then on his back. "Oh, no, he's going belly up," I shouted. I reached into the toilet and turned the fish right side up, but he just floated upside down again when I let him go. Pradeep, we need to do something quick. I told him he'd be okay. He's counting on me. "It needs CPR, Pradeep said. On a person, you would press on their chest and count, or you would shock them with those battery packs attached to paddles that they have in hospitals. I saw it on TV. We have batteries, I said. I ran into my room and took the battery out of my alarm clock. Then I raced back to see Pradeep laying the fish on the shelf by the sink. I put the open-ish end of the battery on him and flip. The fish jerked. I looked at Pradeep, and I did it again. Flip, flop. This time, the fish started wriggling like it did when I first grabbed it out of the bowl. We quickly filled up the sink and dropped the fish in, and it started swimming around. "We did it," I said. Pradeep and I did our secret celebration high five. Two slaps up, two down, elbow bumps, knees, fist bumps, left, right, then "we rock," said at the same time as we bumped fist in the middle. "You shocked him back to life," said Pradeep, "like Frankenstein in that movie. Hey, let's call him Frankie after the monster." "Hello, Frankie," I said, tapping the side of the sink. He stopped swimming and slowly turned around. And that's when I swear he looked me right in the eye and winked. Chapter 4, Frankenfish. Did you see that? I turned to Pradeep. What? Pradeep was drying his hands on the bathroom towel. The way Frankie looked at me, he winked. I stared down at the goldfish, but now he was looking around in the normal way that goldfish do. You know, when one of their eyes is looking at the wall and the other eye is looking up at your left nostril at the same time. Never mind, I said, shaking my head. We've got to get Frankie back in his bowl before Mark notices his gone. We've got to get Frankie back in his bowl before Mark notices he's gone, or else. You're dead meat? Pradeep finished my words. We ran back into Mark's room to grab the bowl of gloopy green water. You can't put him back in the bowl. The grunge will kill him, Pradeep said. We can't put him in clean water. Mark will notice and kill me, I said, and then he'll kill Frankie. We ran back to the bathroom, sat on the radiator, and stared at Frankie swimming around in the sink. Then I had an idea. Hey, what if we make it green with safe stuff? Remember that green food coloring your mom used last St. Patrick's Day? I mean, if it's okay for people to eat, it's gotta be okay for a fish to swim in, right? Pradeep thought for a sec. It'll have to be. Pradeep's mom isn't Irish. She just gets really into holidays. You can pretty much name a holiday, and Pradeep's mom has a party for it. When we went over there for St. Patrick's Day, she had dyed everything green. We even had green finger sandwiches, which, it turns out, don't even have real fingers in them. Totally false advertising. And she had green milkshakes and green cupcakes with green icing. It was cool, except that when you eat 17 green cupcakes in a row, it means you throw up in green. We have to get some of that green food coloring from your kitchen, I said. I can't go home, Pradeep said. My mom will make me stay for the Earth Day polar bear pajama party that she's having. I looked at Pradeep with a face that said, I can't even ask why she would do that. He answered my face. She says the North Pole has really long nights and the polar bears sleep a lot, so they'd want a pajama party, he paused. I told her it didn't work. Never mind. Okay, I'll go and get the food coloring, I said. As I started for the stairs, I could hear the thump, thump, thump of Mark's music coming from his headphones. He must be on the couch just by the steps. There was no way I could sneak past. Okay, I'm taking escape route 5. Pradeep and I had planned 16 different escape routes from both our houses, just in case of a code red. Route 5 was out of my bathroom window. Pradeep, it's up to you to stop Mark from coming upstairs before I get back. You can count on me, Pradeep said. I'll think of something to keep him occupied. He gave me a thumbs up, then took a deep breath and headed downstairs to the TV room, where Mark was slumped over the couch. Can I say, that's a really cool white scientist coat you're wearing, Pradeep said. I heard him start to tell Mark about the nature special on the National Geographic Channel that shows you what's really in a crocodile's stomach. Time for escape route 5. I opened the window of the bathroom and stood on the toilet lid to climb out onto the garage roof. Suddenly, it looked a lot farther down to the roof than it did in the drawing we'd done in Pradeep's notebook. No going back now, though. I edged out the window. Then I heard a splash and the flop. Before I even turned around, I knew what that sound was. It was the sound of a wet goldfish hitting a tiled floor. Chapter 5. That's no ordinary goldfish. No, Frankie, I said, as I jumped off the toilet and scooped him up. He wriggled in my hands as I dropped him back in the sink. He swam twice in a circle and then up to the surface where he stared at me, his eyes glowing a bit green. You stay here. I'll be back. I climbed back onto the toilet seat and turned and pushed the window again, wide enough for me to crawl through. That was when I heard the next splash and then whoosh. Green and gold flashed past my right ear as Frankie leaped out the window. I stuck my head out in time to see him land in a puddle of rainwater on the garage roof. Jumping down, I quickly dug the plastic bag he'd arrived in out of the trash. This was too weird. Frankie really wanted to go outside. None of the ping pong ball fish ever did anything like this. Once I'd filled the bag up with water, I scrambled out onto the roof. "I guess you're coming with me then," I said as I scooped up Frankie from the puddle and plopped him into the bag. I tied a knot in the top and held the bag in my teeth as I climbed down the side of the garage. My feet felt for the top of the compost bin. Got it. From there, I jumped down and onto the lawn. Escape Route 5 was a success, even carrying a fish. Result. I ran around to the front of the house and peeked through the window. I could see Pradeep's back. He was sitting in a chair, and Mark was standing in front of him, showing him his chemistry set. If Pradeep could just keep Mark downstairs for a bit longer, then Frankie and I would be back before he noticed. In seconds, I was at Pradeep's back door, inching it open. His mom was inside making popcorn. Popcorn kernels popped and banged so loudly she didn't hear the door open. She rolled some popcorn pieces in green marshmallow fluff and rolled some others in blue marshmallow fluff and then squished them into tiny round globs. Then she poured melted white chocolate over the top of each of the little Earths. It took me a second, but then I got it, melting polar ice caps. Cool. "Samina," she called, "can you come and help Mommy take out our party plates?" Sammy burst through the kitchen door, dressed in mermaid pajamas, with a blue and green tail swooshing behind her. The tail got caught in the door, yanking her onto the floor with a thud. I covered my mouth so she couldn't hear me laugh. "And before you say anything, laughing at little sisters doing stupid things is totally not evil. It's not even mostly evil. It's just regular." As Pradeep's mom went over to help her, Frankie and I moved over to the cupboard where all the party stuff was kept. I crouched low behind the counter and put Frankie on the floor in his bag so I could open the cupboard and reach inside. "Samina, would you like to lick the chocolate bowl?" Pradeep's mom asked as she put Sammy back on her feet and turned to take the chocolate and marshmallow popcorn balls out into the living room. I heard the kitchen door shut behind her. Sammy toddled over to the counter that we were hiding behind. "Bowl," she announced in that really serious way tiny kids have of saying stuff. She stuck her hands in the bowl, smeared them around, and started licking the chocolate. Then she squealed, "Fishy, fishy." I peered around the corner to see Sammy jumping up and down on the spot and Frankie swishing his tail in circles and paddling his front fins at the same time to roll the bag toward her. How did he figure out how to do that? "Fishy, fishy," Sammy shouted again. I jumped out from behind the counter. "Shh, Sammy." Her bottom lip started shaking in that earthquake warning. This tantrum is going to be a 9 on the Richter scale kind of way. I scooped up Frankie off the floor in his bag and handed him to Sammy. She gripped the top with her chocolatey fingers. "I mean, shh, quiet little fishy," I whispered. "Shh, little fishy." She giggled. She stared at Frankie in the bag. "Swishy little fishy," she said. I ran back to the cupboard and searched. Flour, sugar, sprinkles, icing, tiny little icing polar bears. Ah, food coloring. I grabbed the little green bottle and ran back to Sammy and Frankie. Sammy was still holding the bag, but she was much quieter now. She just whispered, "Swishy little fishy," over and over. Frankie stared at her with his big, green, bulging eyes, and she just stared ahead. What was with this fish? He could survive toxic grunge, jump out of windows, and now he could make the noisiest little kid on the planet go quiet. As I looked at Frankie, a little light bulb went on somewhere in the back of my head. Frankie's glowing green eyes. They looked like the undead gaze that the zombies in Mark's comics used to hypnotize people. And Sammy's stare. One of her eyes was looking at the wall, and the other one was looking at my left nostril at the same time. It was a goldfish stare. Maybe I hadn't saved Frankie's life at all when I shocked him with the battery. Maybe I brought him back from the dead. And now Frankie was a big, fat, zombie goldfish. And somehow, he had hypnotized my best friend's sister. Chapter 6, Dawn of the Zombie Toddler. I had to get back to Pradeep. He'd know what to do. Maybe they'd learned about hypnotized little sisters in Cub Scouts. I grabbed Sammy's slimy, chocolatey hand and headed for the back door, just as Pradeep's mom came back into the kitchen. Oh, hello, Tom. I thought you and Pradeep were playing at your house. Isn't Pradeep with you? Hi, Mrs. Kumar. Pradeep asked me to come and get Sammy, because my mom said she could play with the new goldfish we got, I mumbled. Is that okay? Swishy little fishy, Sammy said again. Tell your mom that's fine, but Pradeep should bring Samina back in a half an hour for dinner. Would you like to come as well? I can... Okay, I blurted out, pulling Sammy by the hand. Pradeep's mom was still talking to us as we ran out the door and around the back of my house. I pushed Sammy through the dog flap in the kitchen door, escape route 14, and then squeezed through myself. Sammy was still doing the freaky goldfish stare thing, and I knew I had to get Frankie back up the stairs and into his bowl with clean green water, or Mark would completely kill me. I peeked around the corner into the living room, but Mark and Pradeep were gone. Then I heard Mark's mumbling voice upstairs. Frankie started thrashing around in the water like mad at the sound of Mark's voice, and I swear his eyes started glowing more than ever. I quickly pushed Sammy and Frankie back into the kitchen. Just wait here, I said, and remember, shh. Sammy put a chocolatey finger to her lips as she held the bag in the other arm like a baby doll. Shh, she said. Okay, I know that it might seem strange to leave my friend's hypnotized little sister alone with the zombie fish that hypnotized her, but I don't know how to explain it. I just kind of knew she wouldn't be in danger with Frankie. I also knew, even back when my brother was mostly evil, Pradeep would totally be in danger with Mark. Zombie goldfish are like code blue in jellybean terms, but evil scientist big brothers are definitely code red. I snuck upstairs and slowly peered around the corner into Mark's room. Pradeep was on the floor. Oh, no, I was too late. I could see his feet, but not his body or his head, because Mark's desk was in the way. Pradeep wasn't moving at all. Mark must have knocked him out. He'd gone completely evil now. The millipedes in my stomach were having a squirming party. Mark stood in front of Pradeep and looked at the goldfish bowl. Fine, he said. If you won't tell me where my experiment is, then you won't say nothing at all. Then I saw Pradeep's foot wiggle and heard him trying to talk. Anything, he mumbled. He sounded like the day we had the green cupcake eating contest at his mom's, and he was trying to say, no more cupcakes, please, with a mouth completely squashed full of cupcakes. Shut up, Mark said, and kicked Pradeep's foot as he went out toward the bathroom. I'm going to put more water in the fishbowl. Stay put, moron. I ran into my room so Mark wouldn't see me. When I heard him turn on the tap on the bathroom sink, I jumped up and tiptoed back to the doorway of Mark's room. I had to get Pradeep's attention to check to see if he was okay. So I made our secret, "I need to get your attention to check your okay" call, which is a cross between a snake hiss and a dolphin click. Pradeep sat up as soon as he heard. He shuffled forward from behind the desk. His arms were stuck behind his back. Then I saw his face. His mouth was completely taped up with scotch tape from ear to ear in one direction and right down his nose to his chin in the other. Just his nostrils were tape-free. He even had little crossways bits of tape going across his cheeks and jaw. That's gotta hurt. I guess maybe telling Mark about what's in a crocodile's stomach wasn't such a great idea after all. I gave him the thumbs up sign and held up the little bottle of green coloring for him to see. I think Pradeep smiled a little then, but it was pretty hard to tell for sure with all the tape. Then Pradeep shook his head really hard. That's when I felt the thwack to the back of my head and I saw the carpet in Mark's room come up to meet my face. Chapter 7, A Classic Evil Scientist Trap. While my face was kissing the carpet, Mark pulled my arms back behind me and tied them together. Everything seemed a bit hazy after that, but he must have dragged me over to where Pradeep was sitting and put us back to back. He had piled up some comics and stuff next to us, and there was a shadow of something over our heads. The next thing I knew, he was tying us together with the belt from his white coat, a classic evil scientist move. Something dripped onto my face. It smelled disgusting. "Pradeep, what is it?" I asked as I wiped my chin on my shoulder. "Mark," Pradeep mumbled. I looked up to see the goldfish bowl sitting on a wobbly tray balanced between two towers of comic books. Water was sloshing out of the bowl with every little move we made. Mark's got the fishbowl filled to the top with the toxic, gunky water balanced over our heads, I said, translating Pradeep's cupcake talk. "How do you do that, moron?" Mark interrupted. "No, shut up. Don't tell me. Tell me where the fish is." He leaned in so his face was right up against mine. I should have said something really cool like, "I guess they don't make evil scientists breath fresheners then." But instead, I just stared back at Mark, trying really hard to ignore the millipede feeling all over my body. Still, I didn't tell him where Frankie was. "Fine," Mark stood up. "Morons, prepare to be gunked." Then I heard a quiet voice say, "Swishy little fishy." Sammy was standing at the door of Mark's room with Frankie in the bag in her arms. His eyes were bright green and his tail was thrashing wildly. He was staring right at Mark. Sammy was looking mega goldfish starry. "Little moron," Mark said. "Hey, she's staring up my nose and at the wall. It's freaking me out. Make her stop." "It's the fish," I said. "He's hypnotized her, and he can do it to you." Pradeep mumbled. "Yeah, sorry. I was going to tell you when..." "Whack, you know," I said. Mark bent over to look more closely at the fish in the bag. Frankie's eyes glowed, and Mark was starting to look a bit goldfishy-stary himself when he suddenly took a pair of protective science experiment goggles out of his evil scientist coat pocket and put them on. I had no idea evil scientists had so many accessories. "Like that's going to work on me," he snorted. "Cool, the fish has come back with evil powers." "He's not evil," I shouted. "Pradeep said, I guess The combination of toxic chemicals and the battery shock must have given him special powers, Pradeep. Yes, I said. Can you stop doing that? Mark stomped his foot. I already figured that out. I'm the evil scientist here, not your moron friend. Does he have a white coat? No. Is he even evil? No. So shut it. That was the most words Mark had ever said to me in his entire life. Mark paced in front of us with his hands stuffed in the pockets of his coat for a minute. Then he stopped and looked at Frankie. Okay, fish. Now you're my zombie goldfish. Just think of all the people we can hypnotize. Frankie thrashed his tail, and suddenly, Sammy lunged at Mark. She dropped the bag and tried to attack him, as much as a 3-year-old dressed in a mermaid suit flailing around can be called an attack. Swishy little fishy, she squealed. Mark just picked Sammy up and wedged her bottom first into his Star Wars waste paper basket. Her mermaid tail flapped helplessly against Chewbacca's face as she struggled to get free. But instead of screaming the house down, she just stared the fishy stare. Wow, Sammy was really zombied out. You need better minions, fish, Mark said as he picked up the bag from the floor. Now, let's see if we can make the whole school into fish zombies. You won't get away with it, Mark, I said, pulling at the white belt, tying Pradeep and me together. You may be an evil scientist, but you're still only 12. Mom will be home soon, and she won't let you hypnotize the school or toxic grunge us or take Frankie anywhere. Just at that moment, Mark's phone rang. Hi, Mom. Nope. Tom's fine. We're playing with his moron friend and his moron sister. Mark stopped to listen. Okay, his little friend and his little sister. No, you stay and have coffee with your friend. Then he paused and said, oh, sorry, no, Tom can't come to the phone right now. He and Pradeep are kind of tied up. Mark covered the phone with his hand. Mwahahahaha, he laughed. Mark was getting way too comfortable with this new evil laugh thing. Then he spoke again. I'm fine. I'm just finishing my science homework. Chapter 8, The Great Escape. He hung up the phone and went to put it in his pocket. As he did, Frankie twisted and shook free from Mark's grasp. The bag landed on the carpet and Frankie started to roll for the door. Yes, Frankie was escaping. Mark walked over to Pradeep and me and tapped the goldfish bowl above our heads. Fish, he said. Say goodbye to the morons. Frankie paused and looked back at us. Go, Frankie, I shouted. Get away now. I felt Pradeep's body go all tense as he prepared for the gunge to hit us. But the glow in Frankie's eyes faded as he looked at me. I shook my head and mouthed the words, Go, Frankie. But Frankie stopped thrashing in his bag and stayed still. Good choice, fish. Mark walked over and scooped up the bag. Remember, if you won't help me, then it's flush time for you. No, I shouted. No, Pradeep moaned. Fishy, Sammy squealed and held out her hands. Now, let's get ready to hypnotize Mom when she gets back, Mark said as he strode out of the room, clenching Frankie's bag tight in his fist. Mark slammed the door. We looked up to see the bowl balancing above our heads, rocking back and forth. It was going to fall. I felt Pradeep trying to reach up to grab the knot in the belt around us, but his wrists were tied too tight. The bowl wobbled more with every move we made. Green slimy water dripped on the back of my neck. Pradeep stretched his fingers as far as he could, but it wasn't enough. I squashed closer to him to try to give the belt some slack so he could reach. No, he said with his fingers pulling on the knot behind his back. Yes! He loosened the knot, and I felt the belt drop away. Roll! I shouted as we both rolled in opposite directions. Just as the goldfish bowl slammed onto the carpet between us, spilling toxic water across the floor. I ran over to Pradeep and pulled the tape off his mouth, leaving sticky pink stripes across his face. "Thanks, Pradeep. How did you do that?" I asked as I pulled the last loop of belt off my wrists. "We did knots at Cubs last week. That was a quarterman's noose. Not too tricky to undo if you know how," he answered. "Then we went to help Sammy out of the trash can." She hugged Pradeep around the neck as I eased Chewbacca off her bottom. "Now, to get Frankie," I said. That's when we heard it, a sound that I never found terrifying until that day. We heard a fatal flush. Chapter 9, The Fatal Flush. We all ran to the bathroom door to listen. "You see, Fish," we heard Mark say, "that's where you're going, unless you help me." Then we heard water splashing. "That must be Frankie splashing around in his bag," I said. "He hasn't flushed him yet." "Swishy little fishy," Sammy chanted. She was still all zombie fish eyes. "We have to get Mark out of there," Pradeep whispered. "His phone," I said. "He'll answer his phone. You take Sammy back home and call him from your house. Tell him you're going to tell your mom, and he'll come over to try and stop you." "What will you do?" Pradeep asked. "I'll run in and grab the bag with Frankie in it while Mark's gone." Pradeep took Sammy downstairs. I heard the dog flap slap shut and waited behind the bathroom door so Mark wouldn't see me when he came out. It seemed like hours of millipedes doing laps in my stomach before I heard Mark's phone ring. "Mwah! Mwah!" He had changed his ringtone to his evil laugh. That was hardcore, evil scientist stuff. Then I heard him speak. "Yeah? Moron? No. You talk, you die." He stormed out of the bathroom and slammed the door behind him. And I stayed where I was. I heard him go into his bedroom and kick the fishbowl on the floor. "Stupid moron, stupid trap," he grunted. He trudged down the stairs, and I heard the front door slam shut behind him. Yes, it was working. Rescue Frankie Plan Part 1. Mark was on his way to Pradeep's to stop him from telling his mom his evil scientist plans. Check. I just had to hope that Mark wouldn't actually kill Pradeep if his mom was there. I crossed my fingers and even my toes inside my sneakers. Rescue Frankie Plan Part 2. Actually, rescued the fish. Nearly check. I had my hand on the doorknob of the bathroom door when I heard that horrible sound again. I heard the toilet flush. I ran into the bathroom and saw the water spiraling down the toilet bowl. "Frankie, no!" I shouted. But he was already gone. Chapter 10. Mission Unflushable. Then I heard a splash outside. I looked up and saw the open bathroom window. I climbed up on the toilet and looked out. There was Frankie, rolling his plastic bag out of the puddle on the garage roof. Then he rolled himself along the gutter, dropped down onto the rain barrel, and with a final dismount, flumped onto the grass. I punched the air. He was safe, but I was dead meat when Mark found out the fish was gone. Maybe I could convince Mark that I'd flushed Frankie. No. He'd never buy it, and he'd kill me anyway, just because he could. I'd be better off escaping with Frankie. I was just about to climb out the window and follow him when I heard the next noise. It sounded like someone falling down the back steps, bouncing off the little trampoline, and crashing into a sandbox. That couldn't be Frankie making that noise. But if it wasn't Frankie, then who was it? I ran downstairs and out the door. Mark was lying face down in the sandbox, groaning. The little trampoline had been put at the bottom of the steps, which were smeared with white chocolate. My first thought was, I'm really good at guessing stuff just from sounds. My second thought was, white chocolate? It's got to be Sammy. Again, again, I heard the giggling voice from behind me. Sammy was carrying a bowl of chocolate and licking her fingers. She started bouncing on the trampoline. "You are funny," she said to Mark. "Again, please, again." Mark just groaned. Pradeep came running across the garden toward us. He stopped when he saw Sammy. Sammy, you're supposed to be inside with Mom. Then he looked at the steps and back at her hands. Sammy, did you? Frankie must have hypnotized her to do it, I said. Sammy smiled. Her hands were still covered in chocolate, but her expression was normal. She didn't look hypnotized anymore. I waved my hand in front of her face to check. Hi, Tom, she said, and waved back at me. She definitely didn't have the goldfish stare anymore, but she also didn't have the goldfish. Where's Fishy? I asked her in an I'm trying not to panic, but really starting to panic kind of way. Swishy little fishy, she said, still bouncing. Fishy rolled away. We looked around for Frankie, under the trampoline, around the bike shed, under the shrubs. No good. Mark's groans started to become words. Things like, stupid morons, and they'll be sorry, and I can smell chocolate. He was starting to move again. Then Sammy squealed again, swishy little fishy, and pointed to the top of the jungle gym slide. There was Frankie. He was rolling his plastic bag onto Mark's skateboard. The skateboard was pointed down the slide, straight at the sandbox, and straight at Mark's head. Chapter 11, Revenge of the Zombie Goldfish. Frankie's eyes were bright, glow-in-the-dark green, and his tail was swishing hard back and forth in the water. The goldfish was set on revenge. I looked at Mark lying at the bottom of the slide, my fists clenched at the thought of him trying to hurt Frankie. But could I really stand by and let Frankie hurt him? Your goldfish is trying to kill your brother, Pradeep shouted. Not if I can help it, I said. And then I did the second most dangerous thing I've ever done in my life. I tried to stop Frankie. Frankie swished his tail hard, and the skateboard started to roll down the slide, picking up speed as it went. Fishy! Wee! Sammy yelled. I raced to the bottom of the slide and threw myself between Mark and the skateboard. I could see Frankie's eyes as he rode the skateboard down toward me. They changed to a soft green, and he swished his tail back and forth wildly. He wanted me to get out of the way. I shook my head and held my ground. I closed my eyes, waiting for the skateboard to hit me. Concussion number two, here I come. Then I heard the skateboard jump off the side of the slide. I looked up to see it flip midair, like when the boarders at the park do half pipes and twists. Except this was a goldfish in a plastic bag, not a skateboarding kid. And the thing about goldfish in bags is that when the board goes upside down, they have no way to hang on. The skateboard flew over me and Mark, and then Frankie started to fall. He must have been 10 feet in the air. I rolled over onto my back and held out my hands to catch him. The bag hit my hands, but I couldn't hold it. It splatted on my chest, and the bag burst open. Water sprayed everywhere, and Frankie was left flip-flopping around on my T-shirt. No, I shouted, Frankie! I jumped up, cupping him in my hands. I've got you, Frankie, I said as I turned to Pradeep. Get some water, quick. Frankie's goldfish mouth was opening and closing as if he were gasping for breath. His eyes were still the soft green color. He flicked his tail and wiggled, and then he stopped moving completely. Hang on, Frankie, I screamed. Pradeep ran over to the slide with a watering can full of rainwater that he had grabbed from next to the shed. I dropped Frankie in it. Pradeep, Sammy, and me all sat around the watering can and stared at Frankie, unmoving in the water. You turned the skateboard on purpose, didn't you? You don't want to hurt me, I said. Mark was still lying in the sandbox, moaning. The goldfish! My skateboard! Why am I wet? Frankie floated belly up in the watering can. He didn't move a fin. "Swishy little fishy," Sammy said, sniffling. Her bottom lip started to wobble again, not in a Richter scale level tantrum kind of way, but in a sadder than a little kid ought to ever feel kind of way. "He's gone," I said. The millipedes that were swimming in my stomach curled up into a big, heavy millipede lump. "I'm sorry," said Pradeep. "Not swishy," whispered Sammy. A tear rolled down her cheek and dripped off her snotty nose into the watering can. And that's when it happened. Frankie started to swish his tail, just a little at first. Then his gills started flapping and his mouth opened and closed. And then he flipped over and started swimming in circles around and around. "Fishy," said Sammy, and hugged the watering can. "Frankie, you're back," I said, hardly able to believe that he was swimming around again. "Who's a good zombie fish?" I said, and stroked him gently behind the gills. "Hey, you know what we just discovered?" Pradeep said. "I know," I said, "that the one thing more powerful than a battery for bringing a fish back to life is..." Pradeep said with me at the same time, "Toddler snot." Chapter 12, The Return of the Mommy. Beep, beep. We heard Mom's car pull into the drive. "Oh, no," I said. Pradeep and I quickly ran over to Mark and helped him to sit up. He was still holding onto his head where he had banged it when he fell into the sandbox. Sammy just sat there, still hugging the watering can. Mom came straight around the back of the house and ran over to us. She could tell there was something wrong. Moms have this thing when they know stuff that shouldn't be impossible to know, like that you didn't eat your carrot sticks at lunch, or that it was you who put the ham slice in the CD player to see what ham sounded like, or that your undead zombie goldfish hypnotized your neighbor's daughter and then tried to kill your evil scientist big brother, but at the last minute changed its mind to save your life. You know, that kind of thing. I took one look at Mom and was sure she would figure it out. It was so obvious what had happened. But the first thing she said was, "What on earth happened here?" "We were just playing," Pradeep said right away. The game got a little messy and wet, and he was talking really fast and looking really guilty. Mom was definitely going to get that something was up. "Fishy is squishy," Sammy shouted. "Yay! Oh, that's sweet. You let Samina play with your fish, Mark," Mom said. "But why do you have the fish outside in a watering can?" "It needed some fresh air," I said, which Mom is always telling us that we need, so it must be true for fish, too. Although, usually when Mom tells us to go outside, it's because she wants to talk to Dad alone or shout at Aunt Sarah on the phone. "Okay," Mom's voice said in a normal kind of way, but her face was really saying, "What are they up to?" "Mark, are you all right?" she added. Mark rubbed his head. He looked over at me and Pradeep and then at Sammy and the watering can. "The goldfish tried to kill me," he said. "I tripped and fell in the sandbox, and then it aimed the skateboard at me." Mom went over to Mark and felt his head for bumps. She's an expert bump finder after all these years. "I bet she could be a doctor in bumps and stuff." "You banged your head pretty bad, Mark." She held her fingers in front of Mark and said, "How many am I holding up?" "It tried to kill me," Mark mumbled. Mom looked over at me and Pradeep. "What happened?" Then I heard myself say the most untrue thing ever. Mark was being really nice, playing with Sammy in the sandbox and on the trampoline. "Bouncy, bouncy crash," said Sammy, now jumping on the trampoline with the watering can. I leaned over and gently took the can from her. "Then he did a trick bounce that made Sammy laugh," Pradeep said, "which isn't really a lie because he did do that even though he didn't mean to do it." "He must have hit his head when he fell," I said. "Oh, poor you," Mom said to Mark as she rubbed his head. But what's this about the goldfish? She helped him stand up, and he walked over to where I was standing with the watering can. He stared at Frankie. The goldfish started thrashing around in the water like mad again, and his eyes went bright green. Mom, look at that goldfish, Mark said, pointing wildly at the watering can. It's gone nuts. It really tried to kill me. Pradeep and I shot a look at each other. We couldn't say anything out loud, but our faces said that we needed a new color jelly bean code because this was way beyond a code red. Mom couldn't look now. She'd see Frankie being all zombie fish. Then she would let Mark flush him for sure, or she'd send him off to some government place where they keep pets that have gone all supernatural and dangerous. All right, she said. I'll look at the goldfish. She marched over toward us. We were doomed. Well, we are out of time, and we're just about halfway through My Big Fat Zombie Goldfish by Mo O'Hara. So if you think this story is terrific, and a lot of people do, considering it's a New York Times bestseller, why don't you go find it online or get it out of the library? Again, the title is My Big Fat Zombie Goldfish by Mo O'Hara. What a fun read. This Children's Hour program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you'll join us next week for Children's Hour. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Meryl Goldsmith. Thanks for listening.
Are you elderly or disabled? Did you know each WRTA fixed route bus has a number of accessibility features such as a ramp to enter, a kneeler which can lower the bus, a securement area for wheelchairs and other mobility devices, priority seating for people with disabilities, electronic signage on the front, side, and rear exterior, a bicycle rack on the front exterior, an interior stop request sign, automated audio and visual stop announcements. Let us make your transportation needs easier and ride the bus with us. Call us with questions at 508-791-9782 or visit our website at www.therta.com.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss? If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.
This is not a public service announcement. This is a one-minute mystery.
While digging for artifacts in the far north, Professor Quantum found a perfectly preserved body of a man. He was overjoyed. He believed the frozen body was none other than Adam from the Bible. What convinced Quantum of that?
And here's the solution to our mystery.
The body was missing what Adam would be missing, a belly button. What Quantum didn't know, however, is that a rare condition called umbilical aplasia causes some people, other than Adam, to be born without a belly button.
And now back to our regular programming.